Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Happy Friday, everybody. I'm Jamie Dodd. He's Thomas Drance. He covers the team for The Athletic. He wrote some interesting stuff at The Athletic about the Canucks today. We'll get into that. We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We have Dunbar Lumber text line news. We've got a new read for the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's very exciting. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. So if you don't know about Tilbury's Industrial Park now, sorry, you've missed your chance. We're not talking about it anymore.
Why?
Because it's not in the read anymore. We got a new Dunbar Lumber read.
Oh, good. I love it.
I'm excited.
Yeah, very excited.
The best was when we used to...
I also love when the Kintec read goes up in the number of Google
now,
reviews.
So I was just about to say that, but now we've just changed it to thousands. So we don't update it. But it used to be like 10,000, 20,000. I was like, yeah, this is so exciting. I can't wait for it to be 30,000.
It reminds me of being a kid and driving by McDonald's and being like, how many burgers have they served? How many burgers have they served? I want them to serve another million burgers.
I want them to flip that sign over.
And then finally it got to like 99 and you were like
99 billion.
You were like, yay. And then it was like, they can't go further. They've done it.
It's over. We reached the end.
Peak burger.
We got there. We finished it. They don't do that anymore.
No. Well, because
they're not bragging anymore.
It's peak burger.
I guess.
I honestly, though, like, I don't know. I was invested. As a child, I'm not kidding.
I think that's
invested.
A pretty universal experience.
Yeah.
It was exciting.
Right?
There's just something exciting about seeing a number that large.
Well, I will say.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Love a giant number, bro. No, I will say, though, one of my true passions in life is watching numbers go up and down. Watching numbers go up and down in any format. It doesn't matter. Why do I like sports? I'm watching numbers go up and down.
Sure.
Bottom right side of my screen on the little lower third. Ticker. Why do I like election coverage?
Sure.
Oh, baby. There's so many numbers going up and down here in different counties, in different provinces. It rocks. Why do I like fantasy sports?
Do you follow the stock market? That's peak numbers going 100%. Up and down.
Stock market, crypto, meme coins.
I remember I was at...
I'm into all of it. If you have numbers going up and down, I want in.
When I was a kid, we were on vacation. I think we were at it was like a Hard Rock Cafe or something somewhere. So it was a very 90s reference already. But they had like a world population counter, like a real time. I don't know how they're getting this data, but like a real time world population counter. And it was exactly what you're talking about. It was like,
at Science World.
Was it at Science World?
Yeah, it was at Science World.
I don't know why I thought it was at the Hard Rock Cafe.
No, it was at Science World.
Two very similar places.
You are speaking my language. Those were some numbers I loved watching.
That is numbers going up right there.
And then I'd be like, why aren't the numbers moving very quickly? And my dad would be like, well, some people are dying. And I'd be like, oh no.
There was just a natural disaster somewhere, so that really bumped the numbers down.
Oh,
you know,
I never saw that.
I don't think they had to get rid of it during COVID. I don't think that's how it worked. All right. It is a Friday edition of the show, as you can probably tell.
We're gonna talk about some numbers.
Some numbers that might go up, some numbers that might go down.
Some numbers that are trending toward diminishment.
We do have a very exciting show coming up, especially in the second hour. The first hour, we'll see how it goes. But the second hour,
I'm excited.
I'm excited, too.
I'm thrilled today. I don't know what to tell you, man.
At 1 o'clock, Ryan Johnson, Abbotsford Canucks general manager, of course, also assistant GM for the Canucks. He's going to join us. Great day to have RJ on.
No kidding.
So much going on, right? Max Sasson comes up. Lekker Mackey goes back down. I mean, how many guys have already logged games for both the Abbotsford and Vancouver Canucks?
We've got to beat
or nine, something like that.
We're approaching double digits anyway.
They've been such a focus and so important for the Canucks already this year. And then you get into guys like, you know, Elias Pettersson, Cole McWard, etc. down there. So tons to get into with Ryan Johnson at 1 o'clock. And then at 1:30, our guy, Dmitry Filipovich, of course, the host of the Hockey PDO cast here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He'll join us and we'll look ahead to a busy stretch of hockey out east for the Vancouver Canucks, starting with tomorrow's opponent, the Ottawa Senators. So RJ at 1, Dmitry at 1:30. But before we do any of that, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, November 22nd, starting with the headlines. Canucks practicing. They're probably done now. They practiced in Ottawa as they get ready to play the Senators tomorrow. And of course, as we've talked about at length, that is the beginning of a six-game road trip, a big-time six-game road trip for the Canucks, considering the circumstances. And, you know, we've talked a fair bit about the trip as a whole, right? It's hold the fort season, who needs to step up, what the stakes are for this trip. You know, today is our chance to drill down on the first opponent, the Ottawa Senators, a little bit. And, of course, a pretty interesting matchup from a Canucks fan perspective with former Canucks head coach Travis Green running things now in Ottawa. And I know the record is not sparkling for the Ottawa Senators right now, but they're still very much in kind of the thick of things in the Eastern Conference. But I think beyond the record and the fact that they've lost three in a row, you know, even John Mattis yesterday, who we had on the show, and I don't think he's alone, you can see some reasons for optimism this year in Ottawa that haven't necessarily been present in past years.
Yeah, they've outshot their opponents 486 to 392 at 5-on-5, but have been outscored 34 to 42. That is tough. 140 attempts more than their opponents. I mean, that's high end. Mm-hmm. That's high end. Their issue, 7% conversion rate, 893 goaltending at 5-on-5, which before we go like, oof. Canucks are at 897.
Yep.
And by the way, right, that's why Vancouver, similarly,
yep,
sterling underlying profile, have only outscored their opponents by one. Why? 5-on-5 goaltending. The Canucks, though, guess what? They're the finishing efficiency.
That's right.
Aces. But this Senators team, if you're not careful, if you're not prepared, or if you're shorthanded, which the Canucks will be on Saturday, have the true talent level to skate you off the ice. This is a team that has the profile that I look at and say, if a couple things start going their way, principally Linus Ullmark doing Linus Ullmark stuff, we could absolutely be talking about a Senators team that at some point this season goes on one of those, like, well, they've got points in 14 of 17 games and are now third in the Atlantic, right? Like that, they absolutely have that baseline talent level 5-on-5, given the way that they're controlling play. Haven't put it together yet, but it's early and they're not far enough outside the mix that we'd, I mean, they have a week till American Thanksgiving, right?
Yep.
They have a week.
Yeah. And no, you just look at the Eastern Conference.
Just gotta get going.
Yeah. There's, as we talked about yesterday, again, with John Mattis, like probably seven spots are spoken for, but, or close to it anyways, but that eighth spot, I mean, I think it's like, the team that would be in that spot right now is 500, right? It's the Bruins. So it's not as if, you know, they have 17 points in 19 games. It's not as if they've dug themselves this massive hole. They're just in this group with a huge number of teams, right? The Bruins, the Sabres, the Red Wings, the Senators, the Islanders, I mean, the Blue Jackets, if they're able to hang around, right, are kind of right around there. So it's a tough road, but they've put themselves in a position to be legitimate challengers for a playoff spot down the stretch anyways, especially, as you say, if they can get some saves at some point.
Yeah, Columbus is an interesting one, actually. I'm glad you brought them up, right? Like, that's another team that I think you're right to sort of, them and Buffalo, for me, are sort of two teams that, hey, look, I'm not guaranteeing it that they get it together or anything, but there's underlying stuff in a high level of talent, like upside talent bets up and down the roster, that, you know, if you got, if we were talking in January and it's like, you know, Adam Fantilli has really gone up a level, and
right,
or if we were talking about, you know, the incredible heater that Tage Thompson is on that's powered the Buffalo Sabres to, and then X team record, that won't shock me at all. So those are, and the Canucks will see Buffalo on this trip, right? So
yep.
I do think, like, on the one hand, we look at this upcoming Canucks road trip and it's Ottawa, it's Boston, it's Pittsburgh, it's Buffalo,
Detroit.
It's Detroit. Well, and I'm not saying the upside stuff about them, but on the one hand, it looks like a who's who of non-playoff teams in the Eastern Conference, but sort of buried in there, you've got new coach bump Bruins, a Buffalo Sabres team that is absolutely better than their record, and an Ottawa Senators team that is absolutely more dangerous than their record. They're going to have to be sharp, shorthanded or not. This team is going to have to be sharp to come out of this road trip, you know, having done the hold the fourth thing and kept pace.
And none of those teams, they're all non-playoff teams, sure, but none of them are like the true incompetence of the league. You know what I mean? It's look at them as like, oh, they're Chicago. Pittsburgh, I guess, would be the team been disastrous. But I mean, still, it's still Sidney Crosby. And
no,
Logan,
totally.
I don't know.
But they can't skate with the Canucks in terms of the team speed. So that would be the one team that I'd.
It is wild that they're going on a 6-game road trip out east and then back through Minnesota. And the weakest opponent is the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I know. It's
and it's like not
up.
A debate. It's like, oh, that's the easiest game.
By far.
That's wild.
Well, and then the Minnesota thing. I mean, Kirill Kaprizov almost sustained a devastating injury, which would have been tragic given the sort of season that he's having. But that's the toughest opponent.
Yeah.
You don't often say that either.
No, absolutely not.
But Minnesota's clearly, a pretty high-class club at the moment, playing great hockey. Lots of interesting young talent. That's a team that has a lot of intriguing young guys, too, that could be, like, Liam Ögren could absolutely be the sort of like difference maker that we're talking about. Oh man, he's really added a punch to their third line at some point 20-25 games from now. Really quickly on this trip, I didn't run this in the piece I wrote at The Athletic today, and we'll get into some of that, I'm sure, as we get into lineup stuff and on, but I do think there's a sense internally, a recognition internally, that the Canucks aren't playing the right way consistently enough based on their own internal standards, right? Like that is sort of part of where the team's at right now. And obviously it's a results-based business first and foremost, and that's going to matter a ton on this trip. But this goes beyond results. The Chicago win, despite Tocchet's public commentary after it, was the sort of performance that I think had, especially on the heels of the Islanders game.
Yes.
That I think had some people internally sort of shaking their heads and a little bit concerned about this team. The flip side of that is the performance against the Rangers, where the work rate was high, the focus was there right from the, because that's part of it, the focus right from the puck drop. That's been something that I think internally they feel the club has struggled with. That was there. That was all there. I think this team feels like if they can play the way they did against the Rangers, even with a variety of key players out of the lineup, this team should be able to hold the fort. To execute hold the fort season with aplomb. Unfortunately, on that homestand, what afflicted them as much as any absences, as much as anything else, frankly, this team just didn't play the right way frequently enough. And I think that's a real sort of thing that this group's going to need to prove, especially if management's going to add additional reinforcements beyond the injured guys coming back with the sort of aggression we might expect in the weeks ahead.
Well, and that's interesting. We can use that to kind of transition to the broadsheet here because, as you say, it's a results business, but I think even more than a run of bad results, a run of bad process and being unable to turn that process around, like that strikes me as the kind of thing that could kind of spur the return of like Trader Jim Rutherford. You know what I mean? Where it's like, okay, this group's not getting it. We might have to make some big changes around here, right? And again, that's just kind of an off the top of my head reaction because I know there's other signals that point to maybe, you know, they're not in a hurry to necessarily make a move, even with all of the absences they have from the lineup right now. And, you know, to your point, as I mentioned, you had a really interesting notebook detailing some of what you're hearing around the team up at The Athletic. And one of the points that you made, and of course, we've talked so much about what they're going to do on the blue line, whether it's internal fixes, whether it's looking for a trade. And one of the things that really was interesting to me is that the team's view on what type of defenseman they're looking to acquire or they would ideally be looking to acquire is pretty different than it was last year. Specifically last year, of course, they go out around this time of year and they bring in Nikita Zadorov, who was a pending UFA. Ultimately, he walks. He goes to the Boston Bruins. This year, it sounds like the appetite would be much more for a player, maybe more in the Filip Hronek mold, who's a long-term fit. I don't know if we're talking that high-end, but somebody that they could see being a long-term fit with the team rather than purely a rental to tide them over.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of the thing I was surprised by, I guess, a little bit when I was started sort of kicking tires, that there's this real sense, and I think it's weighing, honestly, on the club, this real sense of being a little bit in between in terms of the construction of this blue line, that you've got talent coming, and in a year, we're probably talking about a club that has the sorts of in-house options where, you know, if you have a prolonged stretch of Myers and Soucy struggling, you have answers, things that you can experiment with, the
things
flexibility
you can try.
To try things, or more flexibility to try things, which I don't think the club's felt like they have, frankly, even as things have not gone their way, especially on the second pair and occasionally on the third in the early going this season. But right now, those options aren't there. And yet, if you look sort of at what this market is shaping up to be, the limited options available for sale, and frankly, the relatively low quality of those options, it's sort of combining to be almost a perfect storm. Super high prices for kind of meh defenders. Everyone wants them. All but like four teams need to add an additional top four capable defenseman. And I think this club is really grappling with and wrestling with this idea that, are we really going to dig deep into our pockets and pay a premium retail price for a guy who, look, will he help us for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, four weeks for sure? But by the time we get to the playoffs and you know, Carson Soucy gets his game right, are we even going to play him ahead of Carson Soucy? You know, by the time we get to the playoffs, are we really going to play? Are they really going to play more minutes than Tyler Myers?
Yeah.
Because what are we paying for if that's the case? And so it's like a really fascinating set of considerations that I think Canucks management is wrestling with at the moment. We know, because we saw it with Philip Hronek, this group will jump on, aggressively pursue, and elbow their way to the front of the line to land a player that they think is the right fit for them long term. Do they see that player out there right now? I'm not sure. And as a result, you know, will I be stunned if the Canucks find a Zadorov-style hold-the-fort deal in the next week?
Yeah.
I won't be.
Yeah.
I won't be. But I think it's going to have to be at a modest price, unless that player is, you know, one of those credible, game-changing, long-term fits, someone that the organization sees as, you know, playing a role for years to come. And that's sort of why I think sort of re-examining my own reaction, because my own reaction was like, oh, come on, Nikita Zadorov, what are we doing here? But I actually think it's, whether or not Zadorov himself is the piece, I actually think it's an interesting sort of thought exercise or trial balloon that Elliot Friedman floated, because Zadorov has 5 years.
Yeah.
Zadorov has 5 years. He's a long-term fit. He's relatively young for a defender his size, right? He's a couple years shy of 30 still. That to me makes sense as the sort of piece that the Canucks would be perhaps more excited about splurging on here.
Yeah, it's an interesting, and I think that that idea of, are they clear-cut better and going to play more minutes than one of Myers or Soucy, right? Whether you're left shot and like that,
and not just today, right?
Yeah, right when those guys are going,
because the organization knows that their second pair. In fact, I get the sense that there's increasing frustration internally about the struggles of the second pair. But like, they just signed Myers for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Carson Soucy is a guy that this organization has a ton of regard for. I mean, to the point that they acquired Zadorov when he went down last season, right?
Yep.
That they hard matched these guys against McDavid. Like, the organization felt like they were the best bets to shut down Connor McDavid. That was 6 months ago. You don't sort of abandon that way of thinking based on several bad weeks. But so they have had several bad weeks.
But so that's what I mean. It sounds like you say that to fans right now, and it's like, well, they have to be, no doubt about it, better than one of Myers or Soucy. And that sounds like a low bar, but that's actually a very high bar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's
sure,
like the amount of defensemen who might plausibly be available on the open market where there's no debate that they're going to play ahead of those guys is a pretty small list.
Well, and that's why you can't let an 18-game sample unduly color your opinion.
Yep.
Like, if I'd said to a Canucks fan, if I'd said on this program, I don't know that Marcus Pettersson offers a big enough upgrade over Carson Soucy in September, the inbox would have flooded with like, yeah, of course, Soucy's key.
Mm-hmm.
But now, because he's had a few bad weeks, five bad weeks, the opinion's flipped. Like, Carson Soucy, I don't know what's going on there, personally, but I still have a lot of faith in Carson Soucy as a shutdown guy with a heavy shot and, like kind of deceptively good offensive instincts. We just haven't seen him play enough outside of, of his own zone for all the good things he does to really come to the fore this season. I don't have the answer for it. But, yeah, the organization, I think, is... Not that they're not going to make a move. It's just that if they're going to spend on the sort of price that it's going to take to land a top guy, I do think that guy's going to need to be long-term.
All right.
At least their heavy preference. Maybe things change if they have a tough road trip.
Right, yeah. Sometimes you got to go to plan B. There's lots more we can get into from your latest piece at The Athletic. We can save some of that for the next segment because there is some interesting lineup news from the Canucks. And again, as I mentioned, they practice today in Canada before they take on the Sens tomorrow. And Brock Besser per our colleague Ian McIntyre, who's on the trip covering it for Sportsnet, Brock Besser practicing in a non-contact jersey with the team today. So a participant in practice, yes, in a non-contact jersey, but man, that's a great sign for Brock Besser and a great sign for the Canucks that he's able to do that.
And if we assume he's escalating through protocol here, which it would now look like, right? We knew he was on the ice. Maybe seems like it took a couple days for him to get to the next process, although the club did have a travel day mixed in there, but is now practicing with a non-contact jersey. So this is a limited practice, right? Next step would be a full team practice, and then the next day you'd be cleared usually. So I would read this, and again, they never confirmed that he was in concussion protocol, but I think we are adult enough to make some basic assumptions.
Sure.
That I would read this as a very, very strong sign that Besser is close, but also at least something of an indication that he may not be an option for tomorrow.
I agree with that. And then they have the 2 days off after that, right? So can you see that final kind of step on one of those days?
Well,
and then maybe and then it's Boston, Pittsburgh back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday next week?
Well, morning skate could qualify.
Yeah.
I just think you have to be – my understanding anyway would be that you'd have to be symptom-free all day.
Yeah. It would seem a little rushed to go from non-contact today to in the lineup tomorrow. Just gut feeling.
Well,
I don't know.
If he's in the protocol, it literally can't happen. You need to take the extra day. So
right.
If he's in the protocol, we would assume that he's not an option for tomorrow, but we'll see.
Yeah. Okay.
It's clearly close enough that it's interesting.
But potentially an option for he might miss first game of the road trip, but he could be an option after that.
Yeah, and I think the club's close to getting a variety of guys back. Maybe Demko on this trip, or maybe when they get back. I think one thing that's weighing on that decision is obviously the different recovery protocols on the road where you have to travel versus at home. So we'll see exactly how they navigate that. And I think Derek Forbort's getting somewhat close too, and I think the club's excited about that.
Yeah, Forbort, kind of the forgotten guy on this team because he's missed so much time, but they could really use another veteran left-handed option as we talk about, just like they need options.
Yeah,
right, he could be a big part of that.
Well, and he's got the size that I think the coaching staff would be a little more comfortable sort of maybe putting him in with Tyler Myers, right? Like sort of tweaking the second pair in part because you've got another left-handed option with size like Forbort to throw out there, and I do think that, you know, Eric Brandstrom's still building that trust despite how well he's played.
Just one other roster note, and again, from your piece, you were able to confirm JT Miller's status, his technical CBA roster status, while he's taking this leave of absence.
Injured non-roster, which functions exactly like IR. It's slightly more flexible, but that doesn't really matter in this case because Miller's going to miss more than a week anyway. But yeah, number remains on the cap in terms of his salary, but the Canucks do have a roster spot to play with. At the moment, they have 22 active players on the roster and actually don't have the cap space to call up a 23rd, just because at this point you have Miller's 8, Besser's 6.6, Demko's 5, and Forbort's 1.5, all sort of remaining on the books as the club avoids LTI, but sort of not options to play at the moment. So when this club fills their 23-man roster, it's going to have to come from reinforcements getting healthy.
All right, to the playoffs odds update. And, you know, we talked yesterday about the Pacific Division, no one really able to get going in it. Well, Vegas wins last night, but Edmonton loses at home to Minnesota. And you see that reflected in in Dom's model's odds right now, which is he has the Edmonton Oilers with the 8th highest projected point total at the end of the year with 103 points, and the Canucks are 9th at 102, right? So that Edmonton's number has really started to come down as a result of their, it's not a pronounced struggle like it was last year where it was just disastrous, but they're in their own kind of version of just an early season malaise, and you're starting to see it impact their projected point total for the end of the year. And again, it's allowed the Canucks by this metric, and we've talked about some of the flaws in it and all of that, but to be still neck and neck with the Oilers in Dom's model's projected final standings.
Yeah, you're also seeing that reflected in the Vegas odds as the Golden Knights have leapt past the Oilers and are now plus 160 to win the Pacific Division. This is the gambling update, by the way. The Oilers at plus 230, the Canucks at plus 400, and the Kings are getting dinged. They're down at plus 500. In terms of tomorrow's game, really quickly, the line is...
You're really building the...
Killing it.
Building the suspense here.
So here's a mark of respect for the Ottawa Senators. They are favored on home ice against the Vancouver Canucks. So despite the losing streak, the gambling markets, the handicappers, and probably the bettors, because, yes, these lines are set by handicappers, but it is a dynamic marketplace. The Ottawa Senators minus 135 favorites. That's a pretty healthy favorite in NHL terms. Mm. On home ice, Canucks plus 115. Over-under is set at 6. Slightly more steam on the over.
There you go. That's the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break. Again, Ryan Johnson, Abbotsford Canucks GM, he's going to join us at 1. Dimitri at 1:30. We got an open segment next, so keep sending in your text, 650. We'll be right back with more Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650.